I watch the sun and moon circle me to learn what revolution means. Everyone shining their light.
This is for everyone who is far away from home, but close to it at the same time. Diaspora Babes is the art you make, the art you love, and the arc of justice. We are brown, queer, struggling, thriving, too much, too loved, and too loving. My name is Amal, and I'm a Yemeni-Lebanese artist currently based in California, and this is Diaspora Babes, love letters to myself and you.
Dear Diaspora Babe, I'm living my queer Ramadan. Today I'm sharing with you a project I've been working on. I've been writing basically every day my queer Ramadan, which are a series of reflections on my faith and practicing Ramadan and my sexuality and just a lot of the things that I'm noticing. And it's a very vulnerable project because I commit to posting every day, even, you know, if I'm not feeling super great about it. And it's really been wrapped up in this whole process for me of learning to show up for my art and myself, whether I think it's good or not, because I feel like a lot of times when we're assigning judgments to our work, it's just kind of like our brain trying to bully us or keep us small or keep us from like acting or sharing and connecting with people. And so I'm really working a lot with that in like self-mastery and trying to come to a more authentic relationship with myself and my art and people around me. So I'm going to be sharing with you what I've been working on. While I am sharing the written posts every day on my website, you know, sometimes reading isn't for everyone or you can be inundated with things. So I'm hoping that hearing me read some of these will be a nice alternative or supplement. One of the things that has been of immense comfort to me lately has been my poetry club that I share with two of my close friends. And it's a practice often, you know, among other things, of rereading, of returning to text, of spending more time with readings than I have previously done in my life, especially after college. One of the things I've really enjoyed is the process of rereading and reading and talking about things and returning to lines or hearing poetry that I've heard from other sources, then reanimated or brought to life by my friends and being able to access them that way. It feels like being able to walk into a text or a poem laterally when someone you know or care about reads them to you, as opposed to maybe encountering them on a page, which on the one hand can be very personal, but on the other hand can be a little alienating because it's you're reading them between a filter of you and your insecurities or you and your projections about yourself or the person or the text or the situation. And so I enjoy reading aloud and I enjoy being read to. And I hope you will enjoy listening to my queer Ramadan. The other element is that writing this has felt really powerful and healing, almost like spells or mantras. You know, you write something and then you say it, it becomes part of you, or it activates parts of you, or it changes your reality. And doing this my queer Ramadan thing feels like a shift for negotiation with myself and my ancestors, of like a healing, of a clicking back into place. You know, like I felt like in massage when someone is working on, when I am or someone else is working on a knot in the tissues and there's gentle or firmer pressure applied to it, and then there's that beautiful moment where you can feel the knot kind of disperse and the muscle slips back into place. I feel like that's what writing this has been. One of the things I really wanted to talk about on the first episode, the homecoming episode, is that around me, even before this pandemic forced a lot of people into their homes or back with family or having into displacement, I was noticing a pattern of among so many of my friends of having to return home or choosing to return home to a place of with their family or to a place of origins. I really truly feel that this is a year of making home in so many ways, of rooting into the things that make us ourselves, of coming back to the places that formed us, but coming as our whole self. The shifts and stretching and contracting and dilating that allows us to be birthed into our homes and to birth our homes through us. And yeah, this is so many of my friends are coming back in some way or another to some place in their roots or their history and their past and being like, this is who I am and this is where I belong. And the pain and the negotiation and the shifts and the heartbreak and the confronting of heartbreak and the tending of it that was able to be set aside in previous years or previous times that is unable to be shifted this year, that is unable to be let go of. It's confronting. This homecoming is confronting, and writing this is very confronting for me and very powerful. It's like putting my finger on the pulse that runs through me, on the Lee line of power that's running through me, and putting my finger on it like it's a conductor and feeling that energy come through me. And I'm like, wow, this is me. This is who I am. This is where I come from. This is one now. What can I do? What can I be? These are the things I see people around me kind of undergoing. You know, maybe those are like more elevated terms for the struggle and the pain and that is happening and the frustrations and the anxieties and the fighting with the family. But here we are. And I really feel like this is what it is, you know, that this Maikwi Ramadan thing for me is allowing me, it's like a homecoming, it's the sort of homecoming that I talked about in the first episode. Day one. I wrap myself in a kafiyah for the first time I pray in Jamaat with my family in 6 years. Since coming into myself, I have refused to pray in Jamaat with my family, joining in the ranks of hierarchy, women, quote-unquote, behind men, quote-unquote, irks me. It grates my skin and my teeth to the degree where I can't focus, and the standing, bowing, and kneeling feels like a battle against my true being. Each second listening, a betrayal of my nature. So I pray by myself in my own way. Yet this Ramadan, I feel different. Back in my childhood home after many years, I am choosing to fast. I choose suhoor with my family. Praying together feels like a natural extension of eating with each other. I pray behind Baba, but my prayer is my own. I close my eyes in prayers, staying with my breath and my body. My eyes closed, I open my inner sight to a wide open window on a vista of mountains, bright sun opening over a light mist of clouds. This was the view I had while praying in Jamaat at a queer Muslim wedding I attended in the mountains of the south of France last September. I line up with the wedding guests, queer, trans, and Swana fam, folks of all faith in choice around the Congress of Prayerful Movement. Many choose to stand in respect at the sides or behind. The two groups do not fall along the fault lines of Muslim or non-Muslim, religious or non-religious. the two lovers marrying each lead us in prayer, as well as the Muslim woman officiating the nikah. Each of the three leads us in two rakat, mirroring the rakat I pray this morning for Fajr. I show up as I am. I have not covered my body. I have not washed. I only pass my camera to a friend who will be standing at the side. In the first sujood, head to the ground, I break down crying. I am wearing a jean dress that loves my body, one I found at a thrift store my ex-girlfriend pointed me to. I tie-dye, bleached the dress, and an oversized vest to match. The sobs come through my whole body during the prayer, and I put my head to the earth with all my community like a homecoming. I return to the embrace of love, both intensely personal and communal, as if a group of children ran into a waterfall all at once, in a group, but each gasping in the cataract of water separately. The way water allows separate bodies to be connected, it feels like when you're swimming in the sea with multiple people, but when you go beneath the water, it's just you and the current, even if there are others enacting it at the same time. Like a dozen people buried in the same graveyard, separate but sharing the same soil, becoming one with the growing earth. That was how it felt to pray in communion at a queer Muslim wedding. I felt the light of acceptance while showing up as myself that day with a group of people who have also chosen to show up and claim all of the parts of themselves together while also claiming each other's lives in love. Mountains surrounded that peak where the wedding was performed, peaks that protected the gathering and impressed on us the majesty of the wildness inside us that was reflected around us. This is the view that came before me as I pray with my family on Fajr, the first day of Ramadan. While I pray with my birth family who does not accept all of me, I see myself praying in Jamaat at that glorious wedding, with all my queer Muslim ancestors, my queer angels, my lineage, my soul family, my queer Muslim family, all standing in prayer, bowing as one. My family's home does not always feel like my own, though I am here now. I take the bukhur from room to room barefoot, smolder from the censer, a glorious incense, barakah, blessings from the source of all, Allah and the Goddess, to each room in the house, bidding good and dispersing the unbidden. As I write this, the sky turns the same royal blue I am familiar with from exiting the club and pulling all-nighters. It is the gradient of morning I step into as I go to sleep. Day 2. And when we took your promise that you would not shed the blood of your own and would not drive your own from their homes, you then confirmed it, as you yourselves bear witness. But then you yourselves killed your own people and drove a group from among you out of their homes, assisting efforts against them with iniquity and enmity. Surah Al-Baqarah, 84-85, the Essential Quran, translated by Thomas Cleary. Prayer, like sex, is an invitation for my mind to start racing. Both physical intimacy and intimacy with spirit, mediated through the physical moment, appear to trigger me to leave my body and embark on a thought brigade. My thoughts during prayer are pompous, a nationalist parade. Some of the cavalcade skips, others, the elders, dripping in the weight of their decades-old imperial conflicts, march along more stolidly. These are the varying paces of my thinking. Deep breath, a check on the wholeness of my form, hands and arms connected to my feet and legs, head balanced on spine. I feel myself the length of a tree, recognizing roots and branches. I am one. oh, why does my mom have to whisper like that? Why is my dad so loud? What will I write this morning? I didn't drink enough water. And what does Jessica from Escaping Polygamy feel about her place? The thoughts are back. Two short rakats of Fajr are drawing to a close. I silence my brain until I hear the signal from Baba, and I turn my head to the right and to the left. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Over. During the night before suhoor, I expect to send emails inquiring about therapy. Instead, I find several full-length episodes of Escaping Polygamy on YouTube. Excellent. I love content on Middle American Christian cults, quiverful movements, fundamentalist shoot-off branches of the LDS, cults, hierarchy, secret submission. While serial killer true crime is not for me, this shit I love. Partly shock at what whiteness allows people to get away with in this country. Partly cathartic recognition of the tone used to describe post-9/11 climate I grew up with applied to white people in Middle America. The scriptedness and staging of a show like Escaping Polygamy dramatizes the real trauma of women leaving polygamous Christian cults around Utah. The way that children, mostly women, are cut off from their community support for trying to assert autonomy. Though I don't make the connection while binging the episodes on YouTube, later I consider the practice of polygamy among Muslims, which leads me to draw a parallel between the loss of support systems that those fleeing Christian fundamentalism and the fragility of support systems for queers from Muslim families. We all deserve for our needs to be met, for our needs for belonging, acceptance, love, witness, and the distribution of material tasks of survival. Support systems are vital for our survival. Yet when we connect from a place that is not authentic to ourselves, what do the structures mean? The clash of needs generates rage, anger, sadness, shame, grief. I flee from the homes of feeling in my body during prayer and sex. Fearful of future and foregone loss, my brain goes to chatter. I breathe to recenter. I will not turn out the self I love. Day 3. I watch the sun and moon circle me to learn what revolution means. Everyone shining their light. Nujum, Amal Amer. Eating a rich meal after 14 hours of neither eating nor drinking could rush me into a blood sugar laden haze. Taking my dog for a walk in the night breeze stabilizes me in more ways than one. I get to visit with the moon. The slice of crescent greets me on my evening walk after iftar. This is the first Ramadan I have fasted or even observed intentionally since I integrated moon cycles into my spiritual practice. During depressive slumps, when calendar time ghosts and leaves Saturday and Tuesday indistinguishable, the moon offers me a gentle, grounding hand. I can look up to them. The moon shows a different face every day, yet we always know them. The quick changes of the moon also helps me loosen my distressed grasp on life. It's a personal struggle of mine to always feel like time is moving too fast for me, that responsibilities call me to leave what I might learn to love. However, moon cycles remind me that the rhythm of life is like breathing, constant, always inviting and closing, always following. If I take one shallow breath, the very next can be deep in my belly. The waning and waxing moon guides me to take my life with intention and ease. My dog daughter stops to investigate a patch of grass. Venus is bright in the sky, lesbian lover of the moon for the past 9 months. She sinks closer to the horizon night by night before disappearing below the horizon by the end of May for retrograde. We won't see Venus again until mid-June, when she'll appear in the east before dawn. I will wait for her. As a teenager, my planner always looks like it had come off worse in an altercation with my book bag. Pages shorn, sketches partout, notes entered religiously, then not at all. I mark Ramadan into my calendar with frustration. How arbitrary! Why is it 2 weeks earlier than the last? How does a lunar calendar even make sense? I ask myself while in a lifelong struggle with my personal inconsistency. Or my consistent inconsistency. Oh, swear not by the moon, the inconstant moon that monthly changes in her circle, lest thy love prove likewise variable. That's what Juliet says to Romeo, who starts swearing by the moon. Grappling with multiple calendars frustrates my attempts to reconcile what I've been taught about history. No one tells me time is fake, that trauma and love time travel, and my body is the DeLorean. Peanut finishes peeing and resignedly submits to another lap around the block. I consider Ramadan as a time to recenter oneself in the celestial cosmos, to embody one's eating and drinking is aligned with the sun. You exert your solar imperative, your will, while the sun's light shines. You also get to marvel at the waning of your will as the day goes on. By evening, before breaking the fast, my mind is fuzzy and my range of activities is limited. My will is spent, bent to the point of the sun crossing the horizon. And when it does, suddenly there's no rush. It is moon time now, and I attend to my body by its rhythm. One's whole month is aligned with the moon, and we bend toward the reflection of inner and outer. The 28 phases of the moon correspond to the 28 letters of the Arabic language. My walks with the sky, my companion, help me read what is written in me.
Day 4.
Child of diaspora, claim what's yours. Your gender is yours. Your sexuality is yours. Your dress is yours. Your faith is yours. Your culture is yours. Your life is yours. They told us it wasn't. They told us that claiming all of them would break the world. It might. It might break the hierarchies that benefit a few over others. They told us claiming all of those would disrespect Islam. It won't. Period. You claiming all that's yours might cause some cis men who are used to arbitrating cultural or religious authenticity to feel disrespected. That's okay. I find that certain people seem more entitled to decide what is and is not acceptable in faith. They think that the story they learned from someone who looks like them overrides the truth in your gut. Growing up, shame keeps me in line. During a reckoning around faith and how I would conduct my life, I decide that I wouldn't do any religious practices that I did out of obligation or shame. I stop ritual salah, I stop covering my hair, I stop listening to any religious advice that tells me what or what not to do with my body. And there are a lot of hadiths that threaten hell to loose for anything and everything, from plucking your eyebrows to wearing perfume. And I give myself permission to not feel bad about doing what I already do, what I like or want. I never stop calling myself Muslim, nor do I ever call myself a bad Muslim. Sure, sometimes I feel that way. I'm just my own Muslim. Fast forward a few years, and I'm also developing a spiritual practice as a witch. I learn endless rituals for cleansing with water, yet I've been making wudu since I was a child. I encounter multiple suggestions of protective invocations, but I still have the shortest surah, Surah Al-Ikhlas, filed away in my heart and head. I read appropriative imperatives to energetically cleanse by burning sage, but I have bukhur and frankincense. My wonderful friend Phoenix Inanna tells me, don't let Orientalism take the best parts of your culture from you. I take it to heart. Later, I add this. Don't let patriarchy and homophobia take the best parts of your culture and religion from you. Don't let inherited shame, ensuring your part in a hierarchy, keep you from sinking into the practices and comforts that are your birthright. Imperialism, modernity, and capitalism have already taken so much of our ancestral supports and wisdom from us. We deserve what we still have access to. Obviously, there are ancestral traumas to be healed that existed before Western tyranny, histories of colonization by Arabs and iconoclasm that occurred with the spread of Islam, for example. Cycles of violence exist perpetually. But add the violences of Western exploitation, displacement, and environmental destruction that form the dominant structures that persist today, we need all the support we can get. And we deserve the support strategies that kept our ancestors afloat through millennia. There's no going back to an imagined golden age, and authenticity in diaspora is mostly a fiction. So call on the good of what you have been given, and use it as fuel for fantasies toward liberation, dreaming, explorative play that will lead to justice, decolonial strategy, and the world we need. Day 5 and 6. What does shame feel like in the body? I remember I used to never want to even touch or look at myself during Ramadan, regretting the seconds I had to spend properly cleaning myself in the shower. Being fully embodied in my family's home is incredibly difficult. Breathing deeply, dancing, stretching, showing my body all put my brain on danger alert while in my family's home. I turn to movement practice to shift this internal reality. I strive for a movement practice that facilitates a present, loving, consensual relationship with my own body. It is a work in progress. It looks different day to week, month to year, but I try to show up for my material form every day. Right now, that looks like naked yoga before suhoor. Around 3 a.m., I am stretching, strengthening, and pushing myself physically before the fast starts. I have noticed a tight pain in my abdomen for over a year and a half now. It persists mostly on my right side. After sitting with it and looking at anatomy diagrams and moving my limbs to see where the muscle starts and ends, I come to the conclusion it is a tight psoas. I look up exercises to release the psoas, and I find a concise video with instructions to put your weight against a tennis ball at the spots of tension. I find a croquet ball rather than a tennis ball. It serves. I position it about 2 inches to the right of my navel and lay flat, moving around. I raise my right leg to activate the muscle, massaging it around. Tenderness, and then a chasm. I feel overcome by a sudden sensation, a wave of nausea. It's a feeling that's familiar from doing deep hip opening postures in yoga. I feel the small scared animal in my brain freeze and tense, tempted to shut down sensation to protect me from the emotion. My conscious self steps in to comfort the scared animal. I open my mouth and exhale audibly. The feeling eases and passes, a ball of tension released from the sore psoas. I stop reckoning with the sensation. I sit back. I ask the sensation its name. Slowly, shame. Mixed with grief and fear. I sit and breathe, vaguely garnishing from memory the stores of traumas undergone. Earlier traumas met with blame and shame from those tasked as my caregivers. I am a quick learner, and when the next traumas come, I know to shame myself and do so silently. I do not need to rehearse the narrative of what happened. Just tend to the feelings. The rent open sadness. Inside out skin. The burying. I bring my loving attention to the pain. I witness myself. I go to massage other tender points. I am ready for the sensations. I open my mouth to let out audible sighs. I bring sound to myself where before I kept silent. Your abdomen, the area around your navel, is the seat of self-esteem in the body. It's how you hold yourself up. Shame in the body can cause shortness there, crouched over postures, balls of pain held there, like in me. The idea that bad things happen to you because you yourself are wrong or bad, close the fist of your insides. You shrink and always hold tighter. My challenge of taking up space in my own body and my own home reflects that of so many others. People raised as women of color in diaspora are asked to spend their whole lives convincing their families they deserve the space they take up. Relatives become landlords. Your rent for breathing is due. One can give up their whole will for the roles prescribed and still find they have rent to pay. Because your body is not your own, it is communal property. Your consciousness has to pay the price for occupying communal space. Alongside this, your body is a place for other people to put their pain, their traumas. Generational shame is patient. It finds a home in your body in hopes of being seen and waits. It waits until it can jump to another host. Please see me, please witness me, please tell me what was done to me. It's not okay. Find the place this lives in your body and be a witness. Sit with it. Right now, the attention is enough. Softness will follow, and much else. Day 11 and 12. I walk after suhoor this morning instead of after iftar. So I walk Peanut in the morning, chatting with her about this and that. I don't care for your teeth enough. What if they all fall out? Maybe I don't wash and brush you enough, even though I know you hate baths and brushes. Did you get enough cuddles yesterday? And under the deep blue of the lightning east that gives a street light, its last 15 minutes of work for the morning, I notice the familiar feeling of never being enough. I feel around texting my mom when I'm not there, the feeling that chased me away from maintaining my friendships until I escorted the feeling to the door. I am glad to have the chance to recognize this pattern of feeling with my dog daughter, in case I ever have human children, so I can avoid projecting this insecurity onto them. The color of the sky is the same color as my two favorite plastic cups from childhood, a translucent aqua that I would fill with water and drink outside, and the summer sun would lighten slightly when I looked through them, drinking, the sort of sound you could hear when you breathe into a cup was the feeling of walking in my neighborhood at night, just myself and the birds and the sky and the light. I see the sky like the bottom of the freestanding swimming pool my family would erect some summers, and the feeling of walking at dawn with the sky after staying up the whole night feels like when I would swim in that pool, tumbling and turning underwater, looking up at the bottom of the pool. When I start the walk, you can still see constellations. Now they are being wiped from the sky the way paper loses its text when soaked in water. I've never seen my house from this eastern light. I rarely find myself enjoying sunrises. Two other sunrises recall themselves to me. On a beach in Miami, a trip visiting my local friend for our college graduation, we're not on the South Beach, but renting the apartment from one of my friend's uncles for a few days to wake up and go to sleep to the sound of the ocean. I fuck on the beach one night. I say goodbye to my partner while it's still dark, and I sit and watch the water disappear, then lighten. The water becomes golden. I walk into the water and take in the sunrise by way of diving into it. Another time, I watch the sunrise over the Dome of the Rock Mosque, the place of ascension, a view I have from the early Christian convent I am staying at in Old Jerusalem, 4 minutes from the Damascus Gate. The birds sing all over the city, announcing the most gorgeous and heartbreaking of dawns. Today, I am walking the sidewalks around my childhood homes, and I feel all dawns of my life as one. Day 15. My father says the time after the Adhan and before breaking the fast is the best time for dua, for invocation. An attenuation of the moment, gathering of power from the liminal, presence. I only make salah at these liminal times, marking thresholds of night and day, praying fajr and maghrib with my family. The in-between times are when energy can shift. The moment between inhale and exhale. So on the full moon, I dance until I feel where the pain sits, and I dance more. Later that morning, I take a walk, the moon just letting itself down from the sky, the lifting cloak of night announcing the sun's nearing. I see a rooster on my neighbor's roof. The next time I pass the house, the rooster is in the middle of the street. I offer this from my heart to yours. I would love to hear your hashtag MikeWithRamadan stories, what your homecomings have been like, how it's been for you. You know, Ramadan is like so different for so many different people. It looks so different, so many different ways. And so if you want to share, please do. And I'll put it on an upcoming episode. I'm hoping to share with you some of the other posts once I've finished around Eid. So until then, keep safe, keep faith, diaspora babe. I love you. Love, Amal. I read several entries, not all of them, so if you would like to read the full series of entries, you can go to my website, amalamer.com, under My Queer Ramadan. It has a bunch of dashes in it, I'll put the link below.
The magical music for Diaspora Babes was done by Layl Omaran and Almana. Find their pages in the show notes. Follow Diaspora Babes on Instagram at Diaspora Babes and follow me on Instagram at You Can Do It Habibi.
Send your thoughts, questions, reflections, and contributions by way of voice note or email at diasporababes@gmail.com, or just send me something personally on WhatsApp if you have my number. If this was meaningful to you, please rate us 5 stars and share with your friends. Keep faith, keep safe.